we have to work in community. We are not islands.
There's a difference between those calling for peace and those calling for quiet.
There is a change in mindset that's taking place, a greater recognition that we can do better.
I hurt like a mother would hurt.
We are asking people for peace, but I'm being very clear. We're not asking people for patience, and we're definitely not asking people for pacifism.
If I'm not over here messing up my community, what are y'all doing?
That ain't the word.
Hello, Fabric. As I write this and prepare to record this podcast, the family of George Floyd is gathering to remember him and to grieve and to honor his life in Minneapolis. It seems that the whole world is watching. I'm Melissa Locke, and I find my grounding in this movement and community called Fabric here in Minneapolis. I want to welcome you from wherever you are listening. Thank you for being with us and together in this way. We need grounding and community right now in our city, in our nation, like never before. And we need movement. On Monday, May 25th, at an intersection just miles from my house and blocks from our Fabric office, Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin held his knee on the neck of George Floyd, who was handcuffed, for almost 9 minutes. Even after pleas from Mr. Floyd to be able to breathe, even after the bystanders watching pleaded with them to let him breathe, just breathe, even after he became completely unresponsive and stopped moving, the knee remained. That knee, so calmly and coldly on the neck of George Floyd, as three officers watched with equally chilling calm, this is the knee of racism that has been on the necks of Black Americans since our country's founding. It has unleashed righteous anger and pain in our city and nation among Black, Indigenous, and people of color who have been unable to breathe under the weight of American racism for so long. White people, like me, haven't had to see how race is baked into our system so deeply. So deeply still, even long after slavery has been formally abolished, long after Martin Luther King spoke of a dream, long after the Civil Rights Act, it's all pretty much worked and seemed Minnesota nice enough, hasn't it? But now we have seen the knee on the neck. The price we have paid, all of us, we've seen it in the form of lost capacity for full human feeling and connection with our own shared humanity. That price is too great. There is a change in mindset taking place, as President Obama said, a greater recognition that we can do better, and we must. Though I, like all of us, long for peace, it is not a time for quiet, as Reverend Sharpton said. It is not a time for patience, as Mayor Carter named. The official Instagram page for George Floyd has that video that many of you have probably heard about of George's young daughter, Gianna, on the shoulders of someone who, it seems, loved her. She was saying, "My daddy changed the world." It's true. The world is not the same as it was 2 weeks ago. You aren't the same person you were 2 weeks ago. I know I'm not. Already, we were navigating the almost total upheaval of a global pandemic. Now, in these 2 weeks, you've faced many, many more decisions that you've likely never faced before. Decisions about where to be or not to be, what to do or not do, what to say or not say. I've been looking to my husband, Joe, to my neighbors, to my city council reps, our governor. I've been looking to Facebook. I've been looking to many of you at various times this week, wondering things like, should I stay home or not? Should I post this or not? Is this actually helpful, or is this really about me trying to make myself feel better or look like a good white person? Am I being silent when I should speak up? Am I speaking up when I should be silent? What should I let my kids see and hear? What should I be doing right now? I am being asked to defend my own home and neighborhood, really? and I've looked to Fabric too, as many of you have. What will be our response to this clear injustice and to this moment? As a staff leader, I wanted to have answers to give, and I wanted them to be the right answers. But we are facing massive, unprecedented, and much-needed change. We want to respond, but our response to George Floyd's killing, not to mention the pandemic and many other problems that we know are here, our response needs to be about much more than finding the right answer to a question or the right paradigm or the right model or politics to fix this and move on. Our response must be more of a rhythm. It must be more of a listening. We will learn and practice that rhythm and that listening more like a dance or a song, like the seasons or the scientific process. And our responding in this rhythm and this listening cannot end. We cannot go back to normal. So my neighbors and I have gotten to know each other a whole lot better in this last couple of weeks. And we've been wrestling with a lot of those questions I mentioned. Shout out to all of you. Love you guys. So this last Monday was a night of particularly high anxiousness for me. I felt it in the jumpy energy in my stomach and belly. I felt my chest and my neck getting tighter and tighter. And Joe and I found ourselves neglecting our kids who were inside eating the way too late dinner that they had to make for themselves and for us. And we were in our front yard talking with our immediate neighbors about what the plan would be for the night. Should we take turns being out watching? Should we be inside or outside at the end of the block? Or is it okay to be in our front yard in the middle? What's the communication plan? I learned that the night before, at least one unlicensed car had sped down 41st around 3 a.m. Then another car came and parked, and four people got out. My neighbor paused, alerted the neighborhood chat, and moved toward so he could see better. It was four young people, it turns out, two white and two black, maybe teenagers, maybe 20s. He realized with the timing and with some of the chatter he'd seen that they were likely actually just getting back from the protests or being out. He asked them to go home, and they said okay, and they left. When I came in later that night, I confided in one of my neighbors via text. I told her I'd never felt this anxious before. And my message to her was this: ugh, I'm so anxious tonight. It's the worst yet. Our conversation outside helped, and it didn't. It helped to feel not alone, though. I asked if she wanted to join me with my Fabric Women's group on Zoom the next day to find some space to process this all more deeply, and she did. She shared that when I was so ramped up that night that she had actually felt pretty able to engage and think and respond. Yet the night before, it had been possible for her, but her friend was okay. We had all noticed it in the group, the ups and the downs, the moments of clarity, energy, constructive action that give way to sheer exhaustion, despair, hurting, and helplessness. At home, my capacity to be present with my family has sunk pretty low at times. Thank God that usually it isn't at the same time as Joe and the kids, so that they can help fill that gap. I don't know if any of you heard the podcast when the pandemic started from Brené Brown about the importance of having a family gap plan, but I know I'm going to revisit that this week. A Minneapolis friend of Fabric's, an artist, an educator, a speaker, and healer, really, Joe Davis, posted this as I prepare for this message. He said, "This is just a gentle, loving reminder that so many of us are collectively moving through the stages of grief right now. It's unpredictable and nonlinear. Check in with your body and your spirit. Feel all the feelings. Rest as needed. Give yourself the boundaries and the space for healing. We need you well." I love that. It's such a good reminder that we are human beings going through a time of great grief and uncertainty and loss, along with this much needed change. We cannot always be on, doing, working, acting. And if we try to, we probably won't be very useful and we'll probably do more harm. This is a time when we're going to be going inside and then back out again. We pause, we act, we try something, we learn, and we repeat. Pause, act, learn, repeat. Pause, act, learn, repeat. Our response is a rhythm, a strong, regular, repeated pattern of movement in the world. And our response must be a listening to all three strands of life woven deeply, to others, and to ourselves, and to that third strand, our spirit, as Joe called it in his Facebook post, that third strand that you might call God, but that one word or name cannot fully capture. Our response must be a listening to all of these things. And my response will not be the same as yours. We are different people with different networks, experiences, gifts, and contexts. My parents in Arizona are feeling pretty darn helpless this past week, wondering how they can support us and how can they act for justice right now from where they are at home in Arizona. The needs right around them, as well as their ability to respond, will be different from ours, obviously. And ours are different from our friends, the Tripolinos, who live just off Lake Street. But together, we are all asking, new each day, what do we hear? What do we hear in ourselves? What do we hear around us? What is needed right now? What can I do? What can't I do? We're asking the questions and we're in it together. Our response is a rhythm. Our response is a listening. It's time to name the elephant in the room plainly. I am white. I'm speaking to a largely but not all white audience. I've been trained not only to avoid talking about race, but to not even see its impact in all aspects of our society. I am beginning to see. The discomfort, the questions, the options, the experience, and the stakes have been totally different for me in these last weeks of the racial unrest following George Floyd's killing, as well as this pandemic. I had the option, for example, of bringing my kids out to my brother's house for that first pretty scary night in our neighborhood. Sure, I was worried about my property, but not really about my life. Waking up to my whiteness and how that actually is a difference that makes a difference makes me feel a lot of things. Defensive, guilty, ashamed, small. The capacity that my white neighbor showed when he caught himself from reflexively running away or calling the cops or going on the defense that night, that could have been a life or death matter for those kids, especially the two black ones. I don't know what my response might have been. I do know that playing small or staying in my defensiveness, regret, and shame does no one any good. And it matters for non-white people that white people continue to see, practice, and learn. The showing up of white folks along with so many others to protest, call for, and lead change in our policing will literally save lives. The stepping up of white people speaking to other white people about race is critical to this change. The stepping back of white voices to yield to black voices is also critical to this change. Our response is a rhythm, stepping up, stepping back. Our response is a listening. We practice it. We learn it. I want you to listen to this clip of Robin DiAngelo, who articulates all of this much better than I can.
The number one question I get when I give a talk is, okay, now what do I do? And that question has bothered me for a long time. One, to be really honest, I think it's disingenuous. I don't think white people really want to know what to do unless it's the most simplistic thing, which is just keep being friendly. That question tends to function as a way to jump over the hard personal work and just get to the answer or get to the solution. It's a little bit arrogant for folks who have never in their life thought deeply about this, and after an hour, they want to get the answer and go fix it. At the same time, we can't wait till we have it all figured out, right? And so I will offer a challenging question back, and then I will answer the what do we do. So my reply to that question is, what about your life has allowed you to be a full functioning, professional, educated adult and not know what to do about racism? How have you managed not to know? Why is that your question? People of color have been telling us this for a very long time. So that question is meant to be a challenge. It's also sincere. Take out a piece of paper and start writing down why you don't know. Probably on the first of your list is going to be, I wasn't educated on this. Step one. Two, I don't talk about race. Three, I don't really have relationships across race, or not many. And when I do, we don't talk about race. Five, I haven't cared enough. There's your map. And when you get to five, I haven't cared enough, if you can look at yourself in the mirror and say that, then carry on as you always have, but do it with honesty. If you can't look at yourself in the mirror and say, I don't really care, great. Use that motivation to get involved. There's so much good information out there. My website is filled with lists and resources. So probably the number one thing we could do next is take the initiative and go look it up. I use this analogy sometimes. If you went to the doctor and the doctor said, you have an acoustic neuroma, and then the doctor was called out on an emergency and left the room, and the meeting ended, what would you do? Go home and Google the shit out of acoustic neuromas. Would you not? Would you watch every video you could? Would you get on every blog? Would you get on every listserv? Would you even get a different opinion than whatever the doctor had given you? Yes. Why? Because you cared. I think it says something really profound about white people that just taking the initiative to look it up is somewhat revolutionary for us. But it is. And I will never forget talking to a multiracial group and putting the question out to the people of color. What would it be like if when white people ran their inevitable and often unaware racism, you could give us feedback on that and have us receive it with grace, reflect on the behavior, and seek to change it? What would that be like for you? And I'll never forget this man of color raising his hand and saying, it would be revolutionary. And I just want my white listeners to take that in. Revolutionary. That's a pretty strong word for just receiving the feedback, reflecting, and seeking to change the behavior. That's how difficult we are. That's a revolution. That's also how easy it is, but we can't get there from the current paradigm. So work really hard to change your paradigm, and not only will your inner personal relationships change, so will our institutions, because we will see that they do.
If you are white, how have you managed not to know? This is inside out work, folks. Do that homework this week. That is something that you can do. This is work we are leaning into as Fabric staff and leaders. If you're white and you want to learn and practice even more, we are fortunate to have Rachel Martin right here in Minneapolis, offering a powerful framework and practices around embodied anti-racism for white people. Much of my language today comes from her, so thank you, Rachel. A growing number of Fabric folks are finding her work helpful for learning how to respond with both humility and with resilience so that we can be involved in ways that are truly helpful. Where are you entering to this work? Who are you doing it with? What is helping? What are you learning? What are you hearing? We need to know this. Our responses don't need to be and shouldn't all look the same. We can still be in this together. In fact, that's how it needs to work. But let's be in it, okay? Starting with honesty about where you are is the place to start. A response is a rhythm. A response is a listening. I want you to be still for a minute if you aren't. Where are you right now? I want you to look around. Physically, look around. Take note. What do you see? Behind you, to the left, to the right. Look around. Then notice that you are breathing. You don't have to breathe a certain way. Just notice it. Now notice that you are being held up by something. Maybe it's the ground itself. Maybe there's a chair below you. Maybe there's a couch. Maybe it's the seat of a bicycle or a car. Notice if you can that you are being held. Notice if you can let yourself be held right now without wondering if you deserve it. If that's hard, that's okay. Just notice. Keep breathing. Now I want you to think back to when you first heard about or saw the video of George Floyd. What did you hear in George Floyd's voice saying, "I can't breathe"? What do you hear now? What do you hear in yourself, in your body, in your belly? Where does it hurt? Don't judge. Don't judge yourself. There's nothing right or wrong. Just notice. What do you hear in these words from Jesus who says, "Come to me, all who are weary. I will give you rest"? What do you hear from this God, Yahweh, "I am who I am," who asks nothing of us to be worthy of love, to be worthy of being held, and yet everything of us in these prophetic words from Micah? Yahweh has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does Yahweh require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk limp humbly with your God. Our response is a rhythm. Our response is a listening. And our response is a wrestling. As fabric, we use that word a lot. It is why we gather, to wrestle with what matters the most within a community that can hold it. 1 year and 1 day before George Floyd's life was taken, Fabric gathered at Field Middle School. Remember when we used to do that? We were there gathered at 46th Street and 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis. We were talking about the future. We were claiming our role as future scapers, people who could craft tomorrow by building on what we saw happening today. It was about hope, but not just hope, hope in action. The focus that last weekend in May of 2019 was the hearing of long marginalized voices. We were learning to hear, listen, and value those voices, and that would be the building blocks for crafting a better future. Every week of those Futurescape conversations, we began by saying to ourselves and to each other these words: "You have permission to believe that things can change. You have permission to believe that things can change." 1 year later, George Floyd was killed 1.5 miles from where we were gathered. I want to share here the very last part of that message from that day. Let's listen again and see what we hear now. Here's Greg Meyer.
Change needs to happen now, right? There's urgency. Change needs to happen now. It's been going on too long, and it is going to be messy and prolonged. It's going to be messy and prolonged. Cultural change happens slowly and unevenly, all right? So be prepared for a messy, prolonged transition towards what will come. Now, messy, what does messy mean? It means like, I like things tidy. Like, if you want to change the world, fine, but show me on a, you know, on a spreadsheet how it's going to happen and what are the steps towards it, and then we'll go do that. But no, because we're so far off from what's going to work, the transition to it is, we can't just point at it right now. We've got to dismantle some things in order to figure it out. It's also going to be prolonged. It isn't going to happen right now. It's just going to take time. We need to let new voices speak for a while so that they can find their full voice and they can find their place in the larger conversation that we're all part of so that all this can happen as well. In the book of Exodus, Moses is the one who gets tapped on the shoulder to lead the Israelites out of captivity in Egypt, right? Maybe you can see some parallels here, all right? And Moses, as soon as he's asked to do this by Yahweh, by God, who I am who I am, right? Moses says, well, they're not going to listen to my voice. And Yahweh says, yes, they will listen to your voice. Hearing voices, they will listen to your voice. Yahweh also says, they're not going to let you go without some help. I mean, there's going to have to be some pressure put on them. And perhaps you know how the story goes. It does get uglier before it gets better. And they find their way into starting towards that promised land. But what I want to get at with that is, one is we should realize as people of this God that feel called to this futurescape, is that we should know that we need to listen to those voices that are out on the margin, the voices that are in the wilderness. But once they do leave, once they listen to Moses' voice and they all head out, they go into the wilderness. And they are in the wilderness for how long? 40 years, right? 40 years. Now, 40 is not just a number. 40 is a figurative number among Jewish people. It's 4 times 10, which basically means forever, or as long as it takes. It's a long time. It's also literally 2 generations, right? 2 generations of being in the wilderness trying to get to where you're wanting to go. I mean, they're telling us that we need to listen to voices that we're not listening to, and getting where we want to go with them is going to take a long time. And in fact, they're very explicit that no one who starts a journey will be there when they get to the end of the journey. All right? It's going to be messy and it's going to be prolonged. The Bible is telling us when you do these things, when you start setting things right, it is going to be messy and it's going to be prolonged. Don't expect to be different than that. We can't expect to be different from that. I think we need to support that. So this is the last thing on your Sunday papers. Disruption and resistance will increase before we get where we're going. Boy, I like hearing that message. Disruption. Disruption means, yeah, you know, we've been building on a foundation for a long time that doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. We aren't going to fix what we need to be fixing just by adding to it. We're going to have to do some disassembling. There's some good in there. There's some wonderful stuff in there. But we got to do some dismantling to build better, all right? And there's going to be resistance. Resistance will increase. Resistance from the people who don't want to change, as well as resistance within ourselves. Those Israelites in the wilderness for 40 years, guess who was the most unhappy? Was the people on the journey. I mean, they were the ones that were getting freed. They were the ones who were on the way to the promised land, but they too, I mean, this is hard. It's a long trip. They fought it too. Resistance happens. We need to expect that. We need to accommodate that. It isn't necessarily going to be easy, but it's a path towards where we want to go. We can't set a timetable. We need to look for that broader, better definition of where we're headed. So this is my prayer for you this week, is that we're able to step back and to see ourselves. Now, like I've been talking, there are a lot of versions of we here. And each of us bring who we are from the generations that preceded us. We bring who we are according to our own gifts and personality. We bring who we are according to whatever it is that we represent in the social fabric. And that we can stop and we can look in that window. We can see who we are and see the world around us and how we fit into it. And then imagine then that futurescape, the world that we want to see. The world that could be, the world that we can take the bits and pieces that are already sitting around us, and we can begin to put them together in a way that makes sense. And to realize that we're not doing this alone. We're doing it with each other. We don't always have to get it right. We will make mistakes, but we can try. We can say we're sorry. We can own it, and we can try again, and we can help one another. That's how this fabric is woven, and may it be so. Amen.